Hello, and welcome to another episode of Father and Joe. I'm Joe Rocky here with Father Boniface Hicks. And Father, in today's episode, I want to talk about something that probably should have been a concern of mine for a long time now, but it's something that has been picking up later in my life. When I say later in my life, I mean like the last couple of weeks of recording this. And I really don't know a better forum to talk about it than with you on the show, given the fact that we try to talk about things that are going on real in my life. This is something that I believe everyone will experience at some point, I think. Maybe I'm weird. I don't want to ever discount that as a possibility that I'm the one who's weird here. But for some reason or another, I have been having thoughts about death and about all kinds of different directions, how much I haven't completed yet, things I still need to do. And I get weird feelings in different parts of my body, as you've talked about, you know, check in with yourself. Why is that happening? Some of them are happening in my upper chest, where I guess your breathing tract is. Some of them are happening, you know, in more of the gut intestine region of my body. And it's something that, you know, we've talked about death, what, hundreds of times on this show. It's part of life. You know, it's literally every time you say the Hail Mary, which we do every night with my son. So it's not like it's a concept that's completely foreign to me or anything like that. Obviously, everyone's going to die. But for some reason, I'm sitting here in my 30s and my mindset is shifting about it. And I don't know if it's my body's way of telling me, like, get your affairs in order, like you're going out tomorrow, or if this is just something that everyone goes through and it's a natural part of life. But, you know, I've been having, like I said, fear internally expressed in these different ways. They are the same mechanisms I have of when I do have actual fear, the flight or flight mechanism. I can see it turning up, and it's by thoughts. It's not by, oh, that guy's running the intersection. What do I need to do? Slam on the brakes or try to gun it before he gets across? You know, it's not like a traffic accident or something like that. It's a thought that's causing this. And there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of different parts. I think about, on the one hand, the stuff that I feel I need to accomplish from the thoughts that have been given to me, which I believe are given to me for a reason. I look at the element of my marriage and my son. You know, there's certain responsibilities that I still have, and the concept of death is freaking me out. So, Father, that's a very broad and starting point, but like I said, I believe that I'm far from the only person who's ever had these feelings-thoughts before. Maybe it's weird to have them in your 30s, but nonetheless, that's where I'm at, and figured it would be a good person to talk with because I can't think of anyone better. I think you are the best at this field, and this is certainly something that ties to our faith in a pretty real way. So that's where I'm starting, Father, is where I'm at.
Well, the thought of death is a good one, actually. In the rule of Saint Benedict, he places among the tools for good works, along with things like don't kill, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't lie. He also invites the monk to think daily about his own death. And so it's and the Latin phrase, memento mori, remember your death, is a kind of classic one. I just got back from Rome. I was in Rome last week, and it was quite a lovely trip. But it's not uncommon that around the sarcophagi, as you go into different churches and you see these places where they have placed people who are notable for various reasons, but a lot of times on the sarcophagus, it'll say, memento mori, remember your death. And there's even, I visited the Capuchin bone crypt, which is quite striking. They have just a lot of skulls and femurs and 3,700 people, something like that, Capuchins who died, were buried after some period of time, exhumed, and then their bones in order to make room for more dead. These are problems we haven't quite had in the United States because we have so much land and such a short history. But anyway, remembering your death is a very good spiritual practice, because it's good to know, it's good to remember that we're not going to live forever. And so we need to live the time that we have in the best possible way. And, you know, just to say, to take it as an example, maybe make it a little bit accessible. If I know that I have X number of months to live, how would I live differently? The saint would say, I would live exactly as I'm living, because I wouldn't be living this way if it weren't the right way to be living. Now, knowing that you have a certain number of months left in your life may change some of the parameters around things that you do, but it's not like, well, I was wasting my time and now I'm going to get serious about it. Or I was prioritizing things wrongly and now I'm going to fix my priorities. I was putting too much time in work. Now that I only have 6 months left, I want to put time into my loved ones. Well, then put time into your loved ones. So now, again, if you don't need to make money because you only have 6 months to live or something like that, obviously there are some ways that the parameters change. But mm-hmm. for the most part, we don't want the priorities should remain the same. We should be living now as if we were living towards the end of our life or at the end of our life. And that's one of the fruitful ways. If I live knowing that I die, I will live more fully than if I live in a kind of half-hearted way, because I think I can always fix it later, do it later, have more later. And so I make the most of what I have if there's a limited resource. And we often live as if there isn't a limited resource of life. And that's not healthy. It's more healthy, it's more beneficial to know that there is a limited resource, that we only have so much, that we only have so much of our loved ones to live. Now, one can take it to the opposite extreme, and I'm not proposing that either, that we live in constant anxiety that today is the day of our death, and therefore we do nothing because we're so paralyzed by the fear of death. And that's actually addressed in the letter to the Hebrews, that the devil uses fear of death to hold us paralyzed, to bind us and prevent us from being fully alive. And so one of the things that the resurrection frees us from is the fear of death. We don't need to be afraid of death. And so we don't need to live grasping at life either. And we can end up crippled, paralyzed by the fear of death, our own death or the death of others. And we don't want that either. But somewhere in the middle, and that's where I think, you know, St. Benedict's admonition to keep death daily before our eyes is probably a good frequency, not minutely, not hourly, daily. Once a day to remember, today could be my last. Today could have been my last. Either way, I can be grateful, I can be attentive, and I can live this day as fully as possible. So I have some more things to say, but let me just pause there and give you a chance to respond.
Sure, I appreciate that. So where I think I'm getting into the quandary, the issue here is, I guess in that priority part that you were bringing up here, because on the one hand, I know from what my work is in the consultancy firm, basically helping people keep their businesses alive without them so that when they perish or retire, the business doesn't die. And there's a giant enormity that is being missed upon society that, at least for the American economy, which to a degree is the world economy, 30% of it is business owners who are Gen X or baby boomers. Said another way, across the next 15 years, these businesses are going to have to be sold. But the vast majority of them are unsellable because of just problems within the business that we fix here, not to do a whole commercial here. But the bottom line is that when we miss 2% of our economy, it becomes really bad really fast. And it only gets exponentially worse. So I see the potential of a 30% failure rate as like, it would be worse than the depression. So I have the weight of knowing that not only that on a macro level, but I also have the individual of knowing when I walk into a business that these 20 people, I'm going to save their jobs. There's a very personal, real difference making there. And, you know, I have this conflict within me, because on the one hand, it's not spending 24/7 hours praying. You know, I'm not constantly in adoration or anything like that. And I feel that my priorities of, while they are helping other people, it's not my relationship with God per se. It's my relationship with others and in a very real and economic scenario that's starting these relationships. So, and that, let alone the unfinished work I feel that I have with my son and my family. So that's kind of where my personal element of it is. I definitely appreciate you saying about how you would live differently if you were there. And my thought process is I don't think I actually get judged based upon the amount of money I'm making people. In fact, really, money's not the thing I'm going for. I'm going for saving people's jobs, which is their livelihood, which to me is much greater than dollars and cents wealth. So for me, it's, this is the struggle I'm at is are my priorities in line? And the fact that I have to ask, because basically every other time in life I've had to ask, is this a good idea? It normally means I've been doing it wrong. Granted, that might be some of my own baggage coming across here in that regards, but it's still the feeling that I'm having and I guess the crux of my concern here.
So you're concerned about the sort of the economic implications.
Yes, on one level, yes. And then on the other hand, like if this did happen, you know, 6 months from now, like what would happen to Joey, to my son here? You know, there's one thing to have money set up aside. That's all important. I'm not fighting that. But there's a much bigger difference of me being here for it.
Yeah, that's so that's another aspect. I guess I didn't press into that so much in my initial comments. In terms of living fully today, you know, that's where an element of gratitude comes in. It's all a gift, really. Why do you have any days with him? Why does he have any days with you? So that's a little bit of a shift already to recognize that. And then also, we tend to put a lot of responsibility on ourselves that, you know, we're always co-workers in this. Joey is God's son. He's not, first of all, your son. Now, God is cooperating with you to take care of him. And God has entrusted a lot of his care to you. But God is quite resourceful. Now, I should not say that too flippantly. I don't intend to say that too flippantly because there are people who have lost parents and, of course, suffer greatly from that. And you could say, well, if God's so resourceful, why doesn't he do a better job when these things come up? But, you know, he does actually work all things to the good. It's remarkable to see how that plays out. And that works out differently in different people's lives. It's if you were to die, then there would be some other path for Joey that would hopefully be beautiful in its own ways. Somebody would provide something. People would rally around. Maybe he would suffer in the short term, and maybe it would be a point of his real conversion and healing in the long term. You know, there's just so many stories of what happens when things happen outside of our control. And so, you know, kind of the two possibilities, we can live in anxiety about all the bad things that could happen, or we can trust in divine providence. And then you could say, well, is it rational to trust in divine providence? Well, yeah, it is, because God does actually work all things to the good. So it's rational. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. Is it spontaneous? Can I just decide it like a flipping a switch? No, it's not spontaneous and I can't just decide it. Will it happen if I don't decide it? Well, probably not. So that's why we need to at least lean in that direction of, I want to be able to trust like this. I want to be able to trust that God is actually ultimately in control and he is all good. And sometimes it's really hard for me to do that. And I want to grow in that. So that's a good thing. But yeah, so you should live your fatherhood as fully as you can with Joey today. And you should also trust that he is, first of all, God's responsibility. And just as long as you live, he's your responsibility. And that includes, well, if something happens to you, just like you save up money, you do want to incorporate him into more relationships, and you don't want to have a, you know, of course you have a monopoly on fatherhood in a certain way, but you also want to share that responsibility as appropriate as the time comes. And there are two parents and, you know, a lot of things like that, but taking care of those that we love is, and planning in reasonable ways for a future that we can't fully predict are good ways to love people.
Yeah. Okay. So we got 5 minutes left in this episode. So I was going to ask you another question. I wanted to make sure I had time for it, because along what you said there was you can't just flip the switch instantly. And you have to trust in the process of God. You also mentioned it's hard. So I think that I might be bringing up an example of the difficulty in the question here. When you feel fear, is that a sign like fear of this is going to work? Intellectually, I can make a strong argument that says, well, that means you don't really trust it, and therefore you're not doing it right. And on the other hand, it feels also completely natural to think that, you know, this was my responsibility, this was my get. How can I comfortably or confidently just pass it off to someone else, for good, bad, or ugly? And that, I guess that's not even a really good grammatically question, but I think just from looking at you, you can tell what I'm trying to say here. So I'm going to just give it to you.
Sure. That's I like to define fear in, I don't know, the Thomistic terms, I suppose, scholastic terms. Fear is picking up on something that's wrong, evil, dangerous, bad, unjust, whatever, so negative, wrong. And fear is the feeling we have in the presence of something that's wrong when we don't think we can overcome it. Anger is the feeling we have in the presence of something that's wrong when we do think we can overcome it. And when I say think, it's often more spontaneous than that. Our initial impulse is that we can overcome it or we can't overcome it. So when there's a small fire in the house, I feel energized. Anger is probably not the best description, but anyway, I feel energized to overcome it, and I attack it. Mm-hmm. When there's a bear in the house, I feel afraid because I can't overcome it, and I run from it. So those are sort of two basic forms of energy that fill us in response to things that are wrong, that are dangerous, that are bad for us. And so the awareness that there's something bad for us in death is a good awareness. And then the initial impulse, because it feels like an enemy we can't overcome, and that's correct at a natural level, then that fear starts to rise up in us. So we should, you know, just notice it, first of all, that we have that. We should notice that it's picking up on something. There's something real there. There's something to be afraid of there. There is an enemy that I can't overcome on my own. And then combining, you know, or utilizing faith, we can gently move to a place that, can I trust God? Can I trust the power of the resurrection? Can I call on Jesus? And then also other people can help us. Can I share this with somebody who can help me to do those things? Those are kind of gentle ways to respond to our emotions. But I wouldn't start with condemnation. There's something wrong with me. My faith is defective. I should be doing this better. So that's something, that's a pattern that tends to drive us into a bit of a hole, and would be better to sort of open up again with compassion, curiosity, and say, where is this coming from? What am I afraid of? Is there a way in faith that I can overcome this? Is there someone I can share this with who will help me? Perfect love casts out fear. And so as I bring this into relationship, into love, then that diminishes my fear. You know, so anyway, but the first thing is notice it, and it is picking up on something.
Yes, and well, first of all, thank you for the answers. This is one that you didn't know I was going to come and bring this topic on the show here, and just gave amazing answers and clarity to it. We are going to continue this conversation into next week as well, for those who are detecting that this episode here is wrapping up. And as always, we thank you guys for listening, being a part of us, the The numbers are growing. All of you who are leaving us the star ratings and the reviews, they are making a huge difference. We appreciate that. If you have not yet already, please do so. And also, if you think someone else will benefit from this episode, click the little share button and text it over to them. Their phone will figure out the rest from there. So I appreciate you guys being with us, and we'll be with you again next week.